Welcome to Win Tucson this Monday after Thanksgiving, where we all ate too much, or at least I did, but it was so good. And we're still eating some of the leftovers. I think we're on our third day, but some things get better. And the U of A ASU game, there was nothing better than that. We could have gotten over 70 and put a billboard out and embarrassed them, but that was one. That was just so fun to watch, and good for our football team and the coach who moved his family here and gets it, and we are proud. And now I think we're still undefeated in basketball, are we not, Matt?
Correct.
Okay, so, you know, you had lots of good food. We had great sports. Cardinals, not so much, but okay. And we will continue on. And I've invited my dear friend, Betsy Smith, to come on this morning because, yet again, in Arizona prisons, we seem to, if you want a death sentence or a near-death sentence, you need to go to an Arizona prison. It seems like we cannot keep our prisoners safe. This is a federal prison, to be fair. This is not the Pima County, under Pima County Sheriff's supervision, but this is serious. And, politics aside, which the show says we do, Derek Chauvin was stabbed in prison over the weekend. So, Betsy, welcome to Win Tucson this morning.
Hey, Kathleen, thanks. And, happy belated Thanksgiving. I still have pies in my refrigerator.
Okay.
I should bring them into the station, right?
You should.
Matt will eat them.
Eat them. I think you'd have a lot of takers.
And as long as there's coffee.
As long as there's coffee, yeah. Another real world problem that we're probably experiencing today. I didn't even check. Derek Chauvin, I'm not sure how you say his last name, was... I didn't realize that Minnesota case that he was held here. And so let the listeners know about what kind of prison this is. Should he expect to be reasonably safe? We know that when law enforcement goes into prison, there's a higher likelihood that they will be targeted. So let the listeners know what you know at this point, if you don't mind.
So Derek Chauvin, if everybody doesn't know, he is the officer, one of the several officers, but he's convicted of first degree murder of George Floyd in 2020. Now, why should you care about Derek Chauvin? Here's a couple of things. The death of George Floyd is now under extreme scrutiny because more truth is coming out about what actually killed George Floyd. But why should you care about Derek Chauvin? Because the death of George Floyd basically caused a catastrophic breakdown of law and order in this country nationwide. If anybody just heard Matt read the news, what did you hear him talk about? Shootings, stabbings, this, that.
Yes.
And this is, 3.5 years now, because of the death of George Floyd, we've had the vilification and the demonization of the American law enforcement officer, and absolutely huge changes to our justice system because of the death of George Floyd. So that's why you should care about Derek Chauvin. Now, Derek Chauvin was moved to a medium security federal prison here in Tucson, Arizona. If you didn't know it existed, drive down to 9300 South Wilmont, and you can kind of see it off in the distance.
In between your Christmas shopping, drive down and just check out the federal prison.
Go down, say hi, and... It is a medium security prison. In other words, Derek Chauvin is a nonviolent prisoner. He was moved down here, but his attorney initially stated that he needed to be put somewhere where he was not in general population, because exactly what you said, Kathleen, this is a guy who was a law enforcement officer. So, of course, people are going to be gunning from him. And this is the third incident in that prison in a couple of years where we had, violent things happen, including, and Matt talked about this, an inmate who happened to get a firearm to try and kill a visitor. So he was stabbed. They had to perform life-saving measures on him. So obviously he was stabbed badly. Now we're told that he's going to live. And but this, the there's a new documentary out called The Fall of Minneapolis. I cannot recommend this enough. And this will explain exactly why we all need to take a second, third, and fourth look at why Derek Chauvin was allowed to be physically and violently attacked in a prison run by our federal government.
Absolutely. And you know, the Federal Bureau of Prisons has faced increased scrutiny in recent years. Again, remember Jeffrey Epstein's jail suicide, I'll put that in air quotes, in 2019. Just in case anyone's a doubter about that, I still love the memes of his last visitor being Hillary Clinton, but that's just me. And I have no love lost towards Jeffrey Epstein for all his atrocities that he's committed. But at the end of the day, if you're in prison for one thing, a death sentence that you were not sentenced to should not be put upon you. And Chauvin's stabbing comes again as a failure of the Bureau of Prisons. And Matt also mentioned it was quite an enlightening news brief before the show. Not that they're not all, but this one was particularly germane to the show, which is Dr. Nassar, who was the molester of all those mm-hmm. athletes. He was also, I believe he was stabbed. And so, you know, if you're responsible and we want people to uphold the justice system, it has to work at all levels. And the response to the George Floyd thing, Betsy, that was the most concerning to me and remains the most concerning, is the flip of prosecutors. So there was a concerted effort to put in county attorneys around the country, or district attorneys, depending on what state you're in, that were lenient on sentencing or would not prosecute these crimes. And someone has to, what's going to be interesting is how much information we get about this stabbing in the Tucson federal prison and what's coming out. We're about ready to head into our first break. When we come back, I think you have some other facts that maybe you can share. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we'll do that.
Absolutely.
And then what kind of pies do you have left over in the fridge?
I have pumpkin cherry and pecan. So
okay, well,
start brewing the coffee.
Okay. It's a deal. We are talking to Betsy Smith. We are talking about the very serious stabbing of Derek Chauvin, who is in Tucson's federal prison. Well, right now he's probably in a hospital, which is where you go if you go to one of our prisons. This is Kathleen Wynn. This is Wynn Tucson. This is 1030 The Voice, and this is Monday. Welcome back. We're going to keep going. We've got lots of information today, so stay with us. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson with my very special guest, Betsy Smith. Betsy is all things law enforcement. She even married a law enforcement guy. So I don't know how you get any better street cred than that, right?
Exactly. Cop's wives and a cop.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I was a cop's wife, just didn't make the cut. So, but I still love law enforcement. And anyway, I'll just that little get true confessions today. But speaking of true confessions, the family of Derek Chauvin says that they have not received any news, and they've been kept totally in the dark by federal prison officials since he was stabbed in the prison. So they were told he was stabbed and have no other information.
Yeah, his mom had to learn about it from the news. So, you know, that's so awful to, you know, over Thanksgiving, the Thanksgiving holiday, you hear that your son has been critically stabbed. You have to hear it on the news. That's just unforgivable.
Well, and his lawyer, Gregory Erickson, is just, you know, really slamming the Federal Bureau of Prisons today, saying that that this Tucson prison, a prison that has been plagued by security lapses and staffing shortages. Well, yeah, welcome to Arizona, where we are the land of staffing shortages, whether it be our police, our border patrol, apparently our federal prisons. We do not have enough people. We have tons of people, just none of them that can do the job, apparently. But all kidding aside, what do we know? I think you shared with me that Tucker did some factual analysis. So what do we now know about this?
So there is a Hennepin County prosecutor. That's the county in Minneapolis. Her name is Amy Sweezy. Amy Sweezy Tamburino now. Amy Sweezy has filed a sexual harassment lawsuit. And as part of the deposition for that lawsuit, she talks about the medical examiner, and because she was originally involved in the George Floyd case, and she talked to Dr. Baker, the medical examiner, and he called her and he said, you know what, there's no medical findings that show any injury to the vital structure of George Floyd's neck. He died of a drug overdose and terrible health conditions. I want to go back and remind people of something. George Floyd is not a civil rights hero. He was not a good guy. He was a violent career criminal and drug addict,
yes,
who spent years in prison for committing a home invasion and then pointing a gun at the belly of a pregnant woman. He was arrested in, you know, May of 2020 for passing a counterfeit bill. He was put into the back of a patrol car. He had meth. These are all facts. This is not, yeah, you know, something I'm making up.
Right.
He had meth in his mouth. He was handcuffed in the back of a patrol car, and he started screaming, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe." The reason that he did that, and again, my husband Dave Smith and I have interviewed Minneapolis police officers about this case.
Yes.
The reason that George Floyd started yelling, "I can't breathe," is because that's what prisoners in Minneapolis did, so that the police were then forced to call the paramedics, and instead of going to jail, you would get a ride to the hospital until you could be checked out and things like that. So they took George Floyd out of that patrol car, put him on his stomach, you know, like we all saw in the photos, because that's what they were trained to do. But Minneapolis police officials lied about that training, even though you can go online right now and see the photos of the training manual. And they lied about Chauvin's training. They lied about the procedures. This whole case is turning out to be
a lie,
as a lot of us knew. And again, I want to remind people that this has changed, fundamentally changed our nation and our, yeah, justice system. So this is why we need to care about what is happening to Derek Chauvin. Is it that they want him quiet? What is it?
Well, he is quiet. He's in prison, and now he's sedated probably because of his injuries. So he's definitely been quieted, but we can't be quiet. You know, and think back, Betsy, just here in Tucson when the mayor put out the Black Lives Matter banner and poster. So these political narratives are not only wrong, but they're dangerous. And think of all the criminals that are out now, and think of all the damage that's been done not only in our state and continues to be done, but around the country, and it endangers law enforcement. This man signed up to be a law enforcement officer. He was demonized, is still being demonized, and now he's being physically assaulted, serving a term he probably shouldn't be in jail for, but we have to, if we stand by the legal system, we have to stand by it. I hope that they file, and they probably already have filed an appeal. But
he just filed another appeal. The Supreme Court, our United States Supreme Court, refused to hear his initial appeal. But Derek Chauvin has just filed a new appeal based on the testimony in this sexual harassment lawsuit.
Well,
so it's all the timing is all very coincidental.
Yes, yeah, very suspicious, as usual. God bless Tucker. God bless everybody that continues to come forward. They want us to sound crazy. They want us to sound like we're conspiracy theorists. But in fact, if you silence the guy that allegedly killed George Floyd, and we know that George Floyd had drugs in his system, that it was more than likely the drugs in his system that killed him. And this was out at the very beginning, but all that, the media is part of this cover-up, and they go with it because the narrative of Black Lives Matter, and think about the millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars that went into Black Lives Matter that's now, where is that money? What are they doing? Where that's dissipated.
Well, yeah, and we all know where the money is. It's in mansions and we know now that Black Lives Matter Incorporated, the organization, is just a giant money grift. Again, that's all been proven if you want to go online and read about it. If you really care about Black lives, understand this, that since the death of George Floyd for 3.5 years now, there have been thousands, Kathleen, of additional young Black men murdered in this country because of the lax criminal justice policies that we have in this country, the lack of police officers. So people who say they care about Black lives, do they really, or are they just trying to change this country? And again, don't believe me. I encourage everyone to read the book by Liz Collins. She's a CBS reporter and a cop's wife in Minneapolis. She is the producer of this new documentary, The Fall of Minneapolis. But she also wrote a best-selling book called They Lied about the George Floyd case. And, you know, that night that the riot started and the third precinct in Minneapolis was allowed to burn down, my girlfriend was sending me pictures of that. It was her precinct. She was a lieutenant there. And she's in this documentary. And when you hear about what was happening and what the police officers went through, it's just extraordinary. And it's just such a horrible failure and a deception by government at all levels.
Well, and we have to not just go with the narrative. I think the fact that we're not hearing his condition, that we're not hearing who the inmate was that stabbed him, who were all of that, it tells me that, because then they're going to have to explain how that inmate got a weapon. Then they're going to have to explain how that inmate got access to Chauvin. Then they're going to have to explain, you know, why this was even possible. And it's going to show and expose more breakdowns. And so, and as we all know, just as a separate and aside, the Tucson sector is one of the worst, if not the worst, border patrol or border crossing crime areas in the country right now. So we have nothing but crime, and we have a shortage of resources, and a political, there's no political will, it appears, to do something to change this. And so we've got to support our law enforcement. I hope Mayor Romero wakes up. I really do. I hope she understands the federal prison isn't in her purview. However, protecting our citizens is. And we're broken. We are absolutely broken. So go ahead, Beth.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. And I'm going to predict right now that the camera in the area of the prison where Derek Chauvin was stabbed
was out for repair.
Let me just throw that out there right now. Sure.
And Derek Chauvin, I want to be the first one to say this. Derek Chauvin was not committing suicide. Just okay with multiple stab wounds to himself. God bless America. You can't. The other thing, though, Betsy, just to finish this up, is that with the appeal being filed, if they did silence him, if this was a hit, it makes it a less compelling case. So they don't want this to be exposed, especially as we head into another presidential election, because their house of cards is starting to fall. Everything is being exposed, that it isn't as it was. Many of us knew that in our gut, but now we're getting better at putting the facts out there. So I think it's important that we continue to expose this. And I appreciate you coming on with me today to do just that. Anything else? Any other things? Anything? Any other pies
so
in your
fridge?
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah. Well, we can have you back.
Yeah. Retail theft is out of control, and so I want everybody to be careful. Sit on your couch right now and shop on Cyber Monday, because it's probably safer. But I just want to ask somebody, I'm sorry, I want to ask everybody, if you see a police officer today, wherever you're at, whether you see a Border Patrol officer, a Tucson cop, a Pima County cop, tell them thank you.
Absolutely.
Tell them thank you for what they do.
Thanksgiving is a time of being grateful. And as we head into Christmas, please, please, please appreciate those that are doing their job and protecting us. I love our law enforcement. I always have, always will. Betsy Smith, thank you. Thank you to your wonderful husband. And we just appreciate you so much. All right, when we get back, we're going to talk about more failed systems. Yes, the election here, a year and a month later, because what else do we have to talk about? Pinell County. Stay with us. Kathleen Wynn, Wynn Tucson on 1030 The Voice. We'll be back. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. We are going to talk about some different kind of breakdowns, not in prison, although maybe some of the people that conducted the Pinell County election 2022 should have been. We'll see how that plays out. I've invited Jack Donna on, who holds 43 intelligence and technical certifications and diplomas from civilian colleges, technical schools, and military academies. He served in military intelligence, retired as a master sergeant, first sergeant, and he was the subject of an article over the weekend that talks about a group that released analysis of the Pinell County 2022 election and finds deliberate malfeasance, concludes election should not have been certified. Jack, welcome to Wynn Tucson this morning. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you too, Kathleen. Great to be back on again.
Yes. So there was a... Tell my listeners how your team did... You received, I think, a 637-page... pages of evidence, and primarily of transcripts and meetings of Pinell County supervisors, email reports, and articles. And your team synthesized this down to you took the 637, how big a report did you create from that?
We took, the report was 660 some odd pages.
Okay.
of transcripts. This is the actual transcribed conversations between the Pinell County Board of Supervisors and the county attorney and various other citizen witnesses, poll watchers, poll workers, etc., comprising the primary and the general election for Pinell County. So it's their actual words. It was a heavy lift. There were four of us on the team that crunched it. It took us a period of about roughly 5 weeks to get through all of that. I mean, we went line by line, page by page, analyzed, looked at everything. And we generated a 24-page analysis that was reviewed by a reporter, Rachel Alexander of the Arizona Sun-Times.
Yes.
They said, yay, verily, this looks good. We're going to publish it. So they published the entire work on the Arizona Sun-Times, both the source document and the analysis we did.
And you said it took you a long time, 5 weeks. If we could only get our elections done in 5 weeks, we would think we were doing something really good here in Arizona. Five weeks we've gotten so conditioned to that we can't get our elections done in 24 hours. So 5 weeks sounds reasonable, which is sad.
Yeah.
But what else?
Yeah,
go ahead.
And our ancestors got it done the same night.
Yes, yes.
counting by hand.
counting by hand and precinct voting, but concepts. Maybe it's time to return to the good old days.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the recommendations out of this report is that it seems like you zeroed in on Pinell County attorney Ken Volkmore. Can you share your concerns with the listeners about what happened?
Well, what we saw was the pattern that every time, whether it be a citizen or the board of supervisor, attempting to gain any type of transparency or to do something like to fix the problems that were being identified. One board of supervisor in particular, Supervisor Sturdy, He really was trying a Herculean effort to try to get to a hand count. But consistently, over and over again, the county attorney, Mr. Volkmer, and these are his own words, basically stating unequivocally that the law states that there is no provision for them to do a full hand count.
Right.
And in the case of what happened in the primary with you know, the ballot shortages and the incorrectly printed ballots.
Yes.
I would think it would have been prudent to have done a full and complete accounting via hand count.
Well, and I just want to remind, I've mentioned this before, I just want to remind the listeners. Originally in the primary in 2022, Pinal County sent out 64,000 bad ballots that they didn't match up. So you might have lived in Casa Grande, but you got the city election for Apache Junction. You legally couldn't vote. I was the only candidate back then that sued. I sued the county and I said, you're not going to have a fair and free election. And the judge in that case, and I don't remember his name right now, and the county attorney and my attorney, we all had a meeting, and I was going to end up holding up the entire election for the state of Arizona. And did I want to do that? They assured me that that election would be a free and fair election. Well, it wasn't. At 7:30 in the morning, 48,000 ballots did not make it to 33 polling places. That's not fair. That's not free. And I had four teams on the ground because Pinal County, I'd done a lot of work in Pinal County. I'm very good friends with, as people know, with Sheriff Lamb, and we'd worked together. And so it is frustrating to me. And I watched this in real time. I went to their hearings. And
well, there's one,
yeah,
there's
go
one
ahead.
Thing in particular. There's one thing in particular I would like your listeners to know. These mistakes continue to only affect Republicans. Now, it is of note that Pinal County has five board of supervisors, and all five of them are Republicans.
Correct.
But yet these mistakes continue to favor, you know, the other side. Now, in your particular case, and I just got off War Room with Steve Bannon, and I mentioned this to Mr. Bannon that, you know, I believe, this is my own personal opinion, I believe that mistakes were done intentionally. And the reason why I draw that conclusion is because after the debacle of what happened in 2020 and all of the questions surrounding it, you would have thought that they would have gotten this correct. They said, we got to get this right. We got to make sure the citizenry know that they can trust the election system. And even after the primary, they still had problems. They had problems with machines being, the software being updated on the fly. Now, when you update software on a machine on the fly, that machine has to be recertified. But they didn't do that.
Correct.
You know, and ultimately, and like I told Mr. Bannon, I think that you know, you lost your primary because of this. You know, and we got stuck with Juan Ciscomani. You know, I mentioned that to him. I said, you know, and he's terrible. He's a rhino. You know, it's frustrating because, and like I said on War Room, until the courts take an active role in definitively punishing or meting out some type of corrective action regarding these quote unquote mistakes that keep happening and keep favoring one party, this is going to continue. And the reason why it's going to continue is because it works for them. Oh, we got the paper size wrong. Oh, we sent out too many ballots. We'll get it right the next time. Only next time never happens.
So Jack, I want to go back to something. The report cited numerous testimony from poll workers regarding all the problems, many of which broke the law. Boxes used to transfer ballots lacked seals or locks, and the tops were left open. But in an email sent by Scott Johnson, Deputy Director of Operations for Pinal County Elections Department, 5 days before the election was certified, it was acknowledged that he knew about the problems. And the team commented by the email, Scott Johnson clearly knew there were problems identified, but not investigated. The certification appears to have been rammed through. But we have to give Pinal County credit because they did do at some point and found 300 ballots for Abe Hamadeh, which brought him within 280 votes of Chris Mays. And so, whereas they didn't do the prop, they the problem was caused because of malfeasance, because of incompetence. And that's what they said. They blamed it on incompetence of their election director, who was clearly should never have been hired to do the job. But on top of that, people started to say that there weren't going to be enough ballots, and no one responded to that. I remember talking to Ken Volkmer on the day of the election saying, Kent, you have a problem. I've got people on the ground. They're saying that there's no ballots. It was 7:15 in the morning. And he's like, oh, no, we're
You're correct. You're correct. But see, the problem is, yeah, they fixed it. But by the time they sent the ballots, the polls were already closed.
Absolutely. 100%.
And it was Republican ballots that they were short, of course.
Well, of course. Yeah. Our then Secretary of State, I remember that the numbers that were given to the election director were given to her or given to him by Katie Hobbs. So, you know, I think there's going to be enough blame to go around. But also in your report, you pointed out that a firm that Kent Volkmer hired was also a firm that Katie Hobbs used. And that was...
Yes, that's his own words. I believe it's on page 70, where he actually makes those comments that Katie Hobbs, and he wasn't speaking in past tense. We're just going on what he was saying. He was speaking in present tense, that basically the firm that was hired, and I believe the amount that was paid by Pinal County to that firm, Coppersmith and Brockelman, was $50,000. And this was presumably to oversee and fix the problems that happened in the primary. Yeah. Now, that law firm is the same law firm that Katie Hobbs uses.
Exactly. And I think the head of that firm used to be the head of the Democrat Party, if I'm not mistaken. Sam Coopersmith, I think his name is. So if you want to fix a problem and you're in all red county and you're Pinal County, what you should do is hire the former Democrat chair of the Democrat Party to do that. That not in my playbook, but apparently that's what we do. So in Arizona, no one but a family member, household member, or caregiver are allowed to collect and submit absentee ballots. But what happened in this election?
Man, where do I start?
hold that thought. We have to go to a break. You gather your thoughts. When we come back, I'll ask you that question, and we'll figure out where we do start and what we need to do from here. I'm talking to Jack Donna. Jack lives in Sierra Vista. Cochise County also has issues. But right now, Pinal County is in the spotlight for some serious, serious accusations. I'm Kathleen Wynn. This is Wynn Tucson on 1030 The Voice, your local, trusted local news and talk. And we'll be back to talk more about elections after almost 2024. We'll be back. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. We're talking to Jack Donna about election anomalies, things that may have been compromised and continue to be compromised in Pinal County. But Jack, this is a statewide problem, isn't it not, that the entire legal system in Arizona may be compromised?
Well, I mean, that was one of the conclusions that we came to. I mean, again, this is just our opinion, but I mean, the circumstantial evidence is overwhelming to that effect. I mean, you have the state bar threatening, you know, Brian Blem, his attorneys. I can tell you personally, when I first started looking into this in Cochise County, you know, in regards to election integrity, and I sent out an email or about an inquiry, my attorney of 20 years cut me loose, abruptly just called me up on the phone and said, I no longer represent you. Do not say that my firm represents you in any way, shape, or form. And I'm like, why? And he's like, because of the email you sent out. So I got a new attorney. My new attorney told me the same thing himself, that the word has come down from on high. Anybody who tries to touch anything regarding elections is, you know.
And on high is the state bar, in case anyone needs to know. So the state bar has been attacking not only the law license of Brian Blem, and Brian has been representing in a lot of high profile election cases around the state. Dan McCulley is another one, and Dan's got the bar has filed against him. He represented Mark Fincham. So anybody who has the audacity to say, I'm going to represent somebody who has an election complaint is going to receive the scrutiny, if you will, from the state bar. And what they've been doing is systematically filing complaints and threatening people's law licenses. With your jail tax down in Cochise County, I had a friend of mine who's in his 70s. He says, if they want to take my license, that's okay, because I really don't really practice that much law. So we're now finding that the lawyers that are willing to do this are lawyers that are technically willing to be retired. But that shouldn't be the case. The bar shouldn't have that kind of political influence. It goes against the Constitution.
Well, it's not just the bar. You've also got the Attorney General. I mean, Mojave County was going to vote to do a hand count, and
she threatened.
See, people need to understand something here. The First Amendment says that we have the right to redress. Now, the word redress means you have the right to petition your government for redress on wrongs that you feel have been done to you. Now, what we have here, we have a situation here where the attorneys, state bar, and private law firms and such, okay, are shutting down the little guy ability to exercise their First Amendment right of redress. And people need to understand, and my family is very intimately aware and involved in this. This is Marxism. This is communism. First, they get control of the election system. And once they get control of the election system, then they get control of the courts, and then you have no means of redress.
Yeah, and just for anybody that doesn't know, Jack's family escaped communist Nicaragua, so you do know about this firsthand. And
that's correct. Yes, and I anticipate they're probably going to come after me also. I mean, you know, I to try to shut me up.
Yes.
You know, but you know, I got to tell your listeners out there, you know, people better start standing up. You better start getting vocal. You better start emailing your board of supervisors. Tell them they need to get some backbone, and they need to start doing what we elected them for in the face of this. It's tyranny. It's tyranny. And, you know, the people who are remaining silent and sitting back and thinking, well, you know, paying $7 a gallon for gas isn't really hurting me. But when you start to feel the pain and you look around for Kathleen Wynne and Jack Donna, we won't be there anymore.
Yes.
We'll be gone. Because that's how Marxism works, and people need to understand that.
Well, and before we went to the break, we talked about, you know, that a family member or a certified caregiver could bring ballots in, but there were instances
yes.
of people dumping off ballots. No one questioned them. No one asked where these ballots came from, and that was
that's in the report. Yes, that's in the analysis. Yeah, there was an incident where a poll worker, I believe, the person came in with bushels from, I believe it was a retirement community or something. And I think clearly that should have been investigated. Now, in fairness to Sheriff Lamb, okay, this was a rolling thing that happened. And so you would have to have been eyes on the ground in multiple places across Pinal County to see the pattern. You couldn't really see the pattern of everything that happened until this 600-page document was generated.
Right.
So, and the bottom line is, you know, the sheriff, he cannot invest. I mean, he's got to have somebody file a complaint. Someone has to file a criminal complaint.
And I doubt that they'll let the sheriff of that county investigate their own county. I don't know that they'll do that. I mean, does the sheriff investigate his own county attorney? There's got to be a conflict there. So,
well, I did contact Sheriff Daniels last night, and I asked him if Sheriff Lamb had any comment. I'd like to read to you what he said to me, if that's okay.
Absolutely, please go.
So, let me pull it up here so I make sure I get it exactly right.
Okay. And Sheriff Daniels is the Cochise County Sheriff, and Sheriff Daniels, Mark Daniels, and Mark Lamb work together. Right. They both fight at the border. So
That's correct. And so anyway, I asked him if Sheriff Lamb had any comment, And Sheriff Downs responded and said, "Hello, Jack. I would yield to your findings, facts as the best statement. He would appreciate the same. Good luck."
Okay. So there you go.
So I know that
Mark Lamb was traveling out of state this past weekend. So, and Ken Folkmore is out of the country till tomorrow night. So he's in Europe someplace. It's a bad time to be gone, but he is. And just to be fair, we will probably, he called while he was to come on, and we will probably have him on at the end of the week. I want at least to be able to ask some difficult questions about this. And I have had many conversations because I was personally affected by this, but this is so much bigger. This is not about me at all. This is about, that we have elections that people can count on, because what they try to do, and which we've just seen in Tucson here, is disenfranchise voters, and people don't show up because they don't think their vote matters. And now more than ever, that's exactly what the other side wants. Your vote does matter. Mm-hmm. Your vote absolutely matters. And we have to, in 2024, do the right thing and put people in office that will serve the people, not special interest. That is, if we do nothing else but put people in that do that, then, you know, we've got a whole Pima County supervisors, all of our supervisors. I think Cochise County, same thing. All your supervisors are up for reelection. Those roles are critical. And I think Pinell County failed us. And as this report comes out, Jack, if people want to find it, where can they find this article?
All I have to do is go to the Arizona Sun-Times.
Rachel Alexander.
The full 24-page analysis is there.
Yep.
And I want everybody to understand that this, you know, our team comprises a group of, you know, intelligence professionals and
outside of Arizona too. They're not all here.
That's correct. And so, you know, we based this analysis, and you know, it's our opinion. We based our analysis based upon the actual words that the board of supervisors, the witnesses that came in to speak before the board of supervisors, the poll workers, and Mr. Volkmer. I mean, this is their words.
Right.
And, you know, so if they're willing to address it, you know, that would be great. But the issue here is that, you know, taking the totality, a great injustice was done to the citizenry of Pinell County.
Absolutely. And it wasn't just Pinell County, because Pinell County is part of different, Eli Crane, his congressional district, yep. Juan Ciscomani, his congressional district. So there, yes, go ahead.
Yes, I agree.
And so it's important that we understand that this wasn't just about Pinell County. It affected city elections. A lot of different things happened as a result of that one breakdown in that one county. And some might even argue that the governor's race and the attorney general's race could have had different outcomes had Pinell County had their act together. So,
you know, I'd like to say one thing.
Jack,
you
know, we got to go. Say it quick.
All of this could be resolved if they would just do a statewide 100% hand count.
Amen.
It would put to rest all of these questions.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. We will be back tomorrow. We've got some in-studio guests, and I'm excited about that. Have a great day, everybody.